Hi, my name's Nick Smith, founder and creator of Part-Time Pilot. Now, after 3 years, five flight instructors, and over $22,000 out of my bank account, I was finally able to achieve my dream and become a private pilot. Now, I have a bachelor's and master's in aerospace engineering and over 10 years experience as a flight test engineer. So if it was that difficult for someone like me, no wonder 8 out of 10 student pilots never end up becoming a pilot. So this is why I created Part-Time Pilot, and this is why I'm creating this podcast. This podcast will be your audio ground school and just another way Part-Time Pilot is making flight training easier and more consumable for you. So with over 300 students and counting that have used our content to pass the FAA private pilot exams, I hope that you can use this podcast to become the next student to do so. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy listening to the Part-Time Pilot Audio Ground School Podcast.
Hi, this is Bree from Part-Time Pilot. There is no better way to wake up in the morning of a flight than with clear skies and a cup of hot, delicious coffee. And there is no better coffee than coffee straight from Nicaragua. And there is no better coffee for pilots than Twin Engine Coffee. That's why I bought a custom pod for my Keurig and Nespresso machines and a coffee grinder just so that I could grind my own fresh Nicaraguan coffee beans from Twin Engine Coffee. It's so much better than those stupid K-cups or K-pods or whatever you call them. But right now you're probably like, why are you telling us about coffee? Well, it's because not only is it aviation-themed coffee straight from Nicaragua, but it's also coming from a great cause. Rather than taking all of the coffee beans out of Nicaragua to package and sell elsewhere, Twin Engine Coffee is headquartered in Nicaragua, where they have created jobs for local community and have a mission to help reduce local poverty. So if you're a pilot and you like coffee, head over to twinenginecoffee.com/PTP or with the link in the show notes to order fresh whole bean Nicaraguan coffee straight to your home today.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Nick from Part-Time Pilot. Hopefully you guys are enjoying these lessons. I know I am getting a lot of good feedback on them, so hopefully they are useful for you guys and providing you some additional support in your studies through online ground school for private pilot. So I have a couple things that I want to announce. One thing is just that if you guys have any questions in addition to podcast or any of the other things that we give out, which by the way, we're giving out a free study guide. It was right when I first started doing this, I did a study guide and it was super duper popular. So we're doing that again. I'll put the link on that in the show notes, or you can just go to parttimepilot.com and click in the menu on free study guide to sign up, get it sent to your email. Anyways, if you have any questions, you can always reach out to us at team@parttimepilot.com, and that's through email, or you can go to our Instagram. It's @part.time.pilot, or we're on Facebook. We have the Private Pilot Part-Time Pilot Study Group. We also have a new group that I've talked about called Find Ways to Pay for Flight Training. Any of those avenues are great ways to get in contact with us. So that's one. Just if you guys have any questions, even if you're not in our online ground school, my goal was to help anybody who asked for help and try and help, you know, the student pilot community. The second thing is, it right now, this episode is launching March 20th, and at the end of July this year is a little thing that you guys may know of called Oshkosh, the Oshkosh EAA Venture Air Show. So unfortunately, I'm still trying to make things work, but I'm not sure I'll be able to go, but I wanted Part-Time Pilot to have some sort of presence there. So I came up with sort of a fun idea where I would basically pay people who are already going to Oshkosh to simply wear a free t-shirt. Yeah, that's right. So I'm just going to pay you. If you're going to Oshkosh already, I'll send you a free t-shirt. You wear it at Oshkosh, send me a picture to show that you've worn it, and then I'll send you some money, just like that. But then on top of that, it's also going to incorporate a custom link where people can access the link from the t-shirt, and then they can download free pilot tools that we are offering. So here's the thing with that. So if you get a student pilot to download the free tools from your t-shirt and then they go on to purchase, you will get 33% of that purchase price. So for our private pilot bundle deal, which is $250, which is still the best deal out there for both the online ground school and check ride prep course, if someone buys that, that's $83 in your pocket. If the person who scanned your shirt went to that link and then ended up purchasing, that's $83. So if you got 10 people just while you're at Oshkosh simply wearing your free t-shirt and just asking if they want free pilot tools, like that's literally all you have to do. You can make up to close to $1,000. But or you don't have to do any of that work. You can simply just wear the t-shirt, get a free t-shirt, send me a picture of it, and I'll send you, I'm thinking right now, $25. So I sent this out as a little feeler on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok to see if anyone is interested. We got a ton of people interested. So I'm actually going to not, it's kind of going to be a selection process, and I'm not going to be able to select everybody because that would be a lot of free t-shirts and a lot of money for us. So we're probably going to limit it, but we've started a wait list. So I will put that link in the show notes. If you want to sign up for that, you're going to Oshkosh, you like what Part-Time Pilot represents, and you want to get a cool free t-shirt. I'm kind of working on the designs for that t-shirt right now. We want to also make it a cool t-shirt. So free t-shirt, all that. If you want to get on the wait list for that, so you can get all the information on how to eventually sign up and how that's going to work. Again, it'll all be completely free. I will never ask for your guys' credit card or anything like that. If you do sign up and want to make money as that affiliate, get that 33% free purchase, you will have to get paid. You will have to enter some like bank account information so we can pay you. It's like an automated secure website system we do, but that I'm not going to ask you for any money is what I'm trying to say. So it's completely free. So anyways, I will put that link in the show notes as well to sign up for that wait list. And then we'll have some more information in the coming months. Again, Oshkosh is at the end of July, and I wanted Part-Time Pilot to have a presence there. So I thought that was a cool, fun idea, and we'll see how it works. I don't know. We'll see, but could be fun. And who doesn't want a free t-shirt? So, all right, with that said, let's get into the lessons. So this is episode number 34 of the podcast. And in the last couple episodes, we started on the fundamentals of aerodynamics. That is section 7 of the online ground school. So if you're following along in there, you go to step 1, online ground school, private pilot lessons. That's kind of been reworded a little bit. Step 1 used to be a preliminary practice test. I just reworded it. I said, start here on a prelim practice test. And I kind of explained that it's, you know, if you don't have any previous knowledge, that's an optional step. So I made step 1, it kind of made more sense to be the lessons where you learn all the lessons. But if you want to take that pre-assessment, which I think even if you don't have any prior knowledge is a good thing, so you get used to the test, and then it's kind of fun to see at the end how much you've improved on your test score. You don't have to do that. So anyways, the course is now called Step 1 Online Ground School Private Pilot Lessons. That's where all our lessons are. And in Section 7, it's on fundamentals of aerodynamics. We did forces of flight, Lesson 1. We did lift last time, Lesson 2. Now we're on Lesson 3 on stalls. So without further ado, let's get to that lesson on stalls. A pilot is able to control lift by controlling the airspeed and angle of attack, or AOA. As a pilot pitches up and increases the angle of attack, the lift increases. We talked about this in the lift episode. The higher the angle of attack, the higher the lift, until the critical angle of attack is reached. And we kind of briefly mentioned that again in the last episode, and now we're going to talk about what happens at this critical angle of attack and how that relates to stalls. The angle of attack is the angle between the relative wind and the chord line of your wing. The chord line is an imaginary line drawn from the forwardmost point on the wing, aka the leading edge, and this is the cross-sectional view of the wing called an airfoil that we're looking at here. And again, we have a visual representation of this in the online ground school lesson that you can take a look at as we're talking about this. So the chord line is an imaginary line drawn from that forwardmost point, the leading edge, to the aftmost point on the wing, or the trailing edge. The relative wind is the movement of the atmosphere relative to an aircraft or an airfoil, and is opposite the direction of movement of the aircraft. At the critical angle of attack, the flow over the surface of the wing detaches and lift is significantly decreased, like significantly, likely dropping the aircraft out of the sky. This is called a stall. So if you've had any flight lessons and if your flight instructor has demonstrated a stall yet, you know what this feels like. You kind of feel that weightlessness for a sec because you literally sort of start to drop out of the sky. So this is called a stall. At high angles of attacks, the airflow over the surfaces of the wing is no longer able to turn the corner. So turn, go up and around that leading edge of the wing to have the airflow over the top of the wing that creates that pressure differential that we talked about in the last lesson, which helps us create lift. And the reason of this is because the friction force of the air molecule sticking to the surface of the wing is no longer enough to keep the air turning around the corner of the leading edge. So it needs to turn, change direction so much with that high angle of attack with that leading edge sticking up, so much that just that friction, the friction force at the molecular level is not enough to keep that flow attached to the wing. So it separates. The flow separates when the AOA is too high. So on the top of the wing, you get separated flow. The angle is simply too steep and the flow separates from the surface of the wing, causing a stall. The angle of attack at which an airplane wing will stall, i.e. the critical angle of attack, remains the same regardless of the gross weight of the aircraft, and the critical angle of attack can be exceeded at any airspeed or any altitude. The critical angle of attack is defined instead by the design of the wings and the shape of the wing's airfoil. So I mentioned that because it's one of the most common sort of misnomers or errors that student pilots make, or even people in aerospace, is they think that, you know, the weight of the aircraft or even the speed or altitude and air density or something like that is going to change that critical angle of attack. Yes, the weight changes the dynamics and the stability and how much lift you need. That is correct. The altitude changes the density of the air you're flying in, which has an effect on your performance. That is correct. The airspeed changes how much lift you're producing. That is also correct. But this angle at which a stall occurs does not change with those things. It is simply a function of the wings, the design of the wings, the airfoils, and the shape. So I want you guys to sort of remember that. And then here again, we have this image. We have a picture of a wing airfoil during separated flow, aka a stall. So we're showing it. We're at the critical angle of attack. We have the chord line between the relative air. That's the angle of attack. We're saying in this example, it's about 20 degrees for that AOA. And then you can see the flow. It's no longer attached on top of the wing. It actually starts having little vortices on top of the wing, and that's called turbulent flow. It's not laminar. Laminar flow over the top of the wing means it has smooth streamlines that kind of match the shape of the wing. Well, instead, when it detaches, you start to get swirls or vortices on top of that wing. That's turbulent flow, and that's what completely destroys the lift. It's separated, it's turbulent, and it destroys lift and causes a stall when you're above that critical angle of attack and it can't turn the corner around the leading edge of the wing. So again, a stall occurs when the critical angle of attack is exceeded. Let's remember that. That is the answer you want to give an examiner or your flight instructor. When does a stall occur? It occurs when the critical angle of attack is exceeded. Because the angle of attack increases the lift of an aircraft, there are many scenarios where a pilot may approach the critical angle of attack. In other words, as the aircraft slows, the angle of attack has to be increased in order to generate the same amount of lift and not descend. Remember, the angle of attack increases the lift and the speed increases lift. So if you're slowing down, you're getting less lift. So to compensate for that, you have to increase the angle of attack. Again, if in your flight training, when you do the slow flight maneuver, you will physically feel this and understand this. You're slowing down and you're increasing the angle of attack. You're finding that exact angle of attack where you're going to stall, and then you just stay slightly below that and maintain that slow flight condition to have enough lift, keep that flow separate over the wing. That's the slow flight maneuver right there. So, but because of that, there's going to be situations where we are, you know, dangerously close to that critical angle of attack. So the slower the aircraft gets and the higher the angle of attack gets, the closer it gets to the critical angle of attack for that aircraft. Once the critical angle is exceeded, flow over the wing separates and the aircraft is now considered stalled. So that's what we've been talking about. Hopefully it's starting to sink in a little bit from that, but let's kind of dive deeper into all this. To recover from a stall, a pilot must reduce altitude immediately to gain airspeed and flow over the wings. And this is done by pitching down. If the aircraft power is at idle, you want to immediately add full power at the same time. If the aircraft wings are not level, you'll want to level them out as well. Furthermore, if flaps were deployed, you'll want to incrementally return them to the neutral position as you gain enough airspeed such that you are able to stop descending. So you'll work with your flight instructor on this and the procedures to recover from either a power on stall, that's where you have power, or a power off stall, that's where you'll need to add power, right? So that would simulate like a, when you have power off, when you're coming into land or something like that, and a stall during that condition. So, but the main thing you want to do is reduce the attitude of the aircraft immediately to get below that critical angle of attack. So what causes a stall? Being above the critical angle of attack. To recover from a stall, you have to get back below the critical angle of attack. That's going to increase your airspeed by pitching down and get flow back over your wings, back attached over the top of your wing. As we mentioned a few times now, a stall is when the air separates from the wing and the air becomes turbulent over the wing. It is important to know that aircraft are designed so that a stall begins the root of the wing. The root of the wing is the root to the fuselage, right? Like where it's connected to the fuselage, that's kind of like the root, as if it was like a tree growing off the fuselage. So that's the part of the wing closest to the fuselage. They design the aircraft this way so that the ailerons and flaps that are located more towards the end of the wings, near the wingtips, closer to the wingtips, might work while the stall horn, which is located at the root of the wing, is sounding off. Although important to know, this fact should not be taken advantage of, and you should not assume that your control surfaces on the wing are working while your stall horn is sounding off. There is no way to know if the stall has propagated to the control surfaces or not until you are trying to use them and it is too late. So what I'm trying to say here is aircraft design a little stall tab. So when you get into your flight training lessons, this is one of the things you'll check during your pre-flight. It's just simply this little tab that when you design and position so that when you exceed that critical angle of attack, the flow kind of flips that tab up and it creates a horn inside the cockpit to alert you that, hey, you've reached the stall condition. And that's at the root of the wing. And the reason they design it so that the flow becomes separated and it reaches the critical angle of attack at the root of the wing first, so that it hits that stall horn and notifies you. And then further down towards the wingtips of the wings, that's where your ailerons and flaps are, your control surfaces are, well, more so ailerons, so that when you hear that stall horn, you can then level your wings with the ailerons and there's still attached flow, hopefully, towards the ends of the wings over your ailerons. Because when you have turbulent flow at the areas where your control surfaces are, your controls are gonna be mushy. There's gonna be no response. You're gonna, turn the yoke left or right and the airplane is not gonna respond because it's running into turbulent flow and you're getting mushy responses. So that's how they design aircraft, that safety feature. They put the stall horn at the root so that it gives you a little bit of precognition, a little bit of a chance to still be able to control the ailerons and get the aircraft, in a level attitude and whatnot. Now, obviously, we talked about recovering from a stall. The most important thing is reducing the critical angle of attack, which is pitch, which is done by the control surfaces on your horizontal tail. So that is another thing that could, the flow over the tail could also be in a stall condition. But again, aircraft are designed so that usually doesn't occur at the same time as your wing surfaces. So just something to think about. The stall horn is designed to alert you a little bit early, but you don't want to get in that condition or take advantage of it. And obviously you'll want to immediately pitch down, immediately add power if you don't have any, try to regain flow over the wings and get below that critical angle of attack. And then, try and use your ailerons to level your wings. And if you do it quickly enough, right when you hear the stall horn, they should be good to go because of that sort of design feature. The next thing I want to talk about is load factors and stall speed. So you'll hear about these in your trainings, stall speed and load factors and how they interact with each other and what they have to do with stalls. You'll also be tested on these concepts on the FAA written exam. So let's get to talking about them. The additional weight carried by the wings divided by the weight of the aircraft is defined as the load factor. Now, I have a note in here in the online grounds lesson that says the following equations that we're going to talk about for lift and stall speed do not need to be memorized for the FAA private pilot written exam or your check ride, nor do you need to know how to use them. However, understanding the different variables that affect the results of the equations can help you lead to understanding the concepts. Now, I mentioned the same thing in the lift episode. Some people are mathematically inclined in the way they think about things. I was sort of that way, so these equations will help them. If you're not, don't worry about it. Don't get all stressed out that how am I ever going to remember how to use this equation or remember this equation. You don't have to. It's just a way way to visually represent how the different variables that go into lift, that go into stalls and stuff like that, how they work together. So if you don't like math and all that stuff, just try and remember the relationships of the different variables or things that go into flying an aircraft. So I will talk towards those, and it's probably best you're listening to the audio lesson and not looking at the equations if you're someone like that. But if you are someone like that, that's why I put those in here, because they can be helpful. So let's recall the lift equation from the lesson. It said lift equals, and then we have a big fraction. On the top of the fraction, we have the coefficient of lift times density times velocity squared, or airspeed squared, times S, which is the planform or the area of the wing. And we divide all that by 2. That's the lift equation. This shows that lift is proportionate to the air density, speed of the aircraft, and the wing planform area. Lift, however, is also proportionate to weight and load factor. We know this from the general equation of load factor that tells us that load factor is simply lift per unit weight. If you think about this a bit, your load factor or g-force will be 1 when in straight and level flight. Straight and level on accelerated flight, and this is when the lift equals the weight, so the equation lift divided by weight makes sense. So remember we talked about in the first lesson on the forces of flight, lift opposes weight. You need the same or more lift as the weight of your aircraft, and weight is just the force of gravity on your aircraft. It's not just mass, it's mass times the force of gravity. That's the weight force. So you need lift to be more than the weight force, the same or more, to maintain flight. So when you're in straight and level unaccelerated flight, you have the same lift as you have weight force. So lift divided by that weight force is going to be 1, because it's the same thing. That's like saying, okay, our lift force is 5, our weight force is 5, 5 divided by 5 is 1. That is called what we called N, or so N equals L over W, lift divided by weight. That is the load factor. So it's lift divided by weight force, that's the load factor. And then when you have a load factor that's greater than 1, such as during a turn or some kind of climb, descent, or acceleration, when you're not in straight and level unaccelerated flight, lift becomes greater than weight, and the equation again makes sense. So again, it's load factor is lift over weight. So when that becomes greater than 1, that means the top of the equation is larger than the bottom. So lift is larger than weight. So you have more lift than weight. And that is when you're in climb, descent, acceleration, or a turn. So in the equation below, and we're looking here in the online ground school, N is the load factor, W is the weight, and L is obviously lift. So you have N equals L over W. If we rearrange this equation, we see that lift can be equal to weight times the load factor. But we also just talked about that lift is equal to the coefficient of lift times density times velocity squared times the planform divided by 2. So what we can do is we can say, all right, lift is equal to the lift equation, you know, the coefficient of lift, density, velocity, planform, but it's also equal to load factor times weight. So we can set load factor times weight equal to coefficient of lift times density times velocity squared times planform area divided by 2, because we know those are both equal to lift. We can set them equal to each other. And then what you can do is you can solve for velocity. And when you solve for velocity in this equation, you get velocity equals the square root of a fraction. And that fraction is 2 times the load factor times weight over the coefficient of lift, density, and planform area. So now that's a lot to think about, right? And again, don't try and remember these equations, but what this tells us is now we have a velocity that we can find for a certain load factor. So we have load factor in that equation, load factor in weight in that equation, and we know that we can back out a velocity. So that's what I want you to know, is that you can find a certain velocity for a certain load factor and certain weight. So we see that aircraft velocity is proportionate to the square root of a lot of different variables, including load factor, weight, lift coefficient, air density, and wing area. Now, if you remember, I mentioned that the lift coefficient is directly proportionate to the angle of attack, linearly proportionate until a point called the critical angle of attack. This was demonstrated in the figure we talked about before. The coefficient of lift at the critical angle of attack is called the maximum coefficient of lift. So that coefficient of lift, where you get that stall to occur, where that critical angle of attack is, we call that the max coefficient of lift, or CL max. If we were to plug in the maximum coefficient of lift into the equation for velocity that we just came up with, that had load factor, weight, and all that, it would give us the velocity at that point, at the critical angle of attack for that given set of conditions. So we say, okay, we're going to plug in the coefficient of lift at our critical angle of attack. So that's going to give us the velocity at our critical angle of attack. And that is actually what we call the stall speed, or the stall velocity. So we call that, you might also call it V stall. So that's what we have here. We have V stall equals the square root of a big fraction, which is 2 times load factor times weight over CL max, which is the coefficient of lift at the maximum angle of attack, the critical angle of attack, times density times planform area. So from this equation, again, don't get caught up in the equation. What you want to take from this so far is that we have just been able to find a velocity that tells us when we reset critical angle of attack, what our velocity is going to be for a specific load factor and weight of our aircraft. So when we have a specific weight and a specific load factor, we know what that stall speed, the speed of our aircraft is going to be when we reach that critical angle of attack. And this can help us as pilots in the cockpit because we have these airspeed indicators. Not all cockpits have angle of attack indicators, so which you can monitor to see if you're reaching that critical angle of attack. We talked about we have the stall horn, but most aircraft don't have that critical angle of attack indicator. A lot of the new aircraft do, and it's very handy. But it's good to know for a given configuration what our stall speed is going to be so we can avoid and stay above that stall speed. So from this equation, we see that this velocity is not just dependent upon the critical angle of attack and CL max, but also related to the weight, load factor, air density, and wing area. The equation also shows that as altitude increases or decreases, the indicated airspeed at which a given airplane stalls in a particular configuration will remain the same regardless of altitude. So while this stall speed is a function of all those things, including air density, which does change with altitude, it is not directly related to altitude. So I want to say that again, because this is sort of one of the questions, tricky questions that you might get on the FAA written. They kind of ask you if the stall speed changes with altitude. And the answer for this particular question is going to be no. The indicated airspeed at which a given airplane stalls in a particular configuration will remain the same regardless of altitude. Now, if that question said, would it change with density? Would it change with the weight of your aircraft or the load factor? Then you would answer yes. But altitude specifically is not directly related to the stall speed. Stall speed tells us the speed at which your aircraft will start to stall for a given configuration of load factor, angle of attack, air density, and wing area. The stall speed tells you that below this speed, you cannot expect efficient flow over the wings for the given configuration and conditions. This is why flaps are beneficial in that they increase the wing area, that's S in the equation we talked about, that planform area, which decreases the stall speed, meaning you can fly at lower speeds without stalling when coming in to land softly and quickly. So again, that's sort of the whole point of flaps. It changes that planform area of the wing in real time, allowing you to fly at a slower speed and still have enough lift. So let's sort of review a few of these things in this equation and how they interact with stall speed, because I want to make sure you guys have a good understanding of what can and can't change stall speed. So aircraft weight. Aircraft weight affects the stall speed and is directly proportional to it. As weight increases, stall speed increases. As weight decreases, stall speed decreases. Air density. Air density affects the true airspeed, stall speed. It is important to note true airspeed and not indicated airspeed. You likely have memorized your aircraft's stall speeds in terms of an indicated or calibrated airspeed, and we're going to get more into the differences between indicated and true airspeed in a bit, so don't get too hung up on this. So this is okay that you've just heard of, you know, like an indicated airspeed in terms of stall speed, but you need to know that these equations and these relationships are in terms of true airspeed. True airspeed is your indicated airspeed corrected for non-standard atmospheric conditions. So when we talk about airspeed in these equations, we're talking about true airspeed. So that takes into effect non-standard atmospheric conditions. So that's why that phrase, as altitude increases or decreases, the indicated airspeed at which a given airplane stalls in a particular configuration will remain the same regardless of altitude. That is why, because indicated airspeed does not take into account the atmospheric conditions, which are changing in these equations. So this means that as you gain altitude and the atmospheric conditions change, air density decreases, your true airspeed will change and thus your stall speed as well. So that's what changes in the equation, the density and the true airspeed in those equations as we change altitude. And that's, again, sort of why that phrase, does stall speed change with altitude, is not correct. No, it changes with different atmospheric conditions, which do change with altitude, but not altitude itself. Stall speed is inversely proportionate to air density, which means that as air density increases or density altitude decreases, and again, we're going to get into density altitude in a bit, so don't get too hung up on that, but as air density increases, your stall speed will decrease. So as air density increases, stall speed will decrease. That's a good thing. Then as air density decreases, your stall speed will increase. So the less air density we have, which happens at higher altitudes, the higher your stall speed will get, which is a bad thing because that means all these maneuvers and stuff that we're doing, we're closer to that stall speed. The margin for error is smaller. Okay, the next one is the maximum coefficient of lift. As mentioned before, the max coefficient of lift depends on the angle of attack, but this can change with the use of flaps. As we talked about, flaps increase the maximum coefficient of lift, and the coefficient of lift is also inversely proportionate to the stall speed. It's on the bottom of that equation that we talked about. So that means that when CL max goes up, the stall speed goes down. So as we increase that CL max, the stall speed goes down. That's a good thing. That's what flaps are doing. Deploy the flaps are increasing that CL max, which decreases our stall speed. Finally, load factor. Stall speed is also proportionate to the load factor as seen in that equation that we talked about. That's the N in the equation. And again, remember, load factor is just lift divided by weight. When you're in straight and level unaccelerated flight, that load factor is going to be 1. This can also be told as G forces. Probably should have mentioned that before, but when you're not feeling any acceleration, meaning you're not speeding up, slowing down, or changing directions, right, turning or climbing or anything like that, you're not feeling any change in the load factor. Your G-forces are the same. It's 1. You're feeling normal gravity G-forces. When lift is above and you're changing the vectors of the forces that you're feeling, that your G-forces are going to increase to be above the weight of the aircraft, and so you're going to have a load factor above 1 and G-forces above 1. So the stall speed is directly proportionate to the load factor, meaning that when the load factor goes up, the stall speed goes up. When the load factor goes down, the stall speed goes down. So a lower load factor is good in terms of stall speed because we want that stall speed to stay low and away from the speeds we usually fly at. When the load factor goes above 1 during turns and accelerations, the stall speed is increased. Again, as load factor goes up, stall speed goes up. This is critical for pilots to remember. And out of everything that we've sort of talked about and broken down about stall speed and about load factor, this is sort of all culminating into this last sort of few sentences that I'm going to say here that is critical for you to remember and know as a pilot. So especially during slow banks and things, when you're coming into landing, for example, on a turn from base to final, for example, this is critical to know because you're on these turns, you're at a low airspeed, but you're turning. So you're having accelerations and, you know, and changing directions. So you're increasing that load factor on your aircraft, but you're already at a low speed. So your stall speed, as your load factor increases, your stall speed is going to inch closer to that slow airspeed that you're at. So you really have to be cognizant to maintain a good margin. This is why it's so critical to not only have coordinated turns, but also to maintain the proper airspeeds when you are in pattern and slow flight. So we have a figure in the lesson that's going to help us sort of visualize this stuff. It's the bank angle versus load factor is the first one we're looking at. So we have load factor in G's or, you know, N on the vertical axis, and then we have bank angle in degrees on the x-axis. And the relationship that we see on this chart, the relationship to load factor or G-forces and bank angle, is an exponential relationship. So that means as the bank angle increases, the load factor increases exponentially. So at first, when we have about a 10 degree bank or a 20 degree bank, the load factors only increases above 1 by like to 1.1 or 1.2. Then at a 30 degree bank angle, we get up to like maybe 1.3, 40 degrees. Now we're up to 1.4 maybe, and then 50, now we're up to like 1.7 load factor. And then at 60 degrees, we're all the way up to a 2 load factor. So that means we're feeling double the force of gravity. So our load factor is double what it is in normal straight and level accelerated flight. And then now we have another chart. Because we know that load factor is directly proportional to stall speed, we can assume a similar chart that shows how stall speed is increased with bank angle. And we do this, we just change the chart. We have bank angle still on the x-axis. axis. But on the y-axis, instead of load factor, it's something that we pilots can understand more in the cockpit, and that's an increase, a percent increase in stall speed. So when we're at a bank angle of 10, that percent increase might be something like 3 to 4 degrees. When we get to a 20 degree bank angle, now we're up to like 5 degrees. 30 degree bank angle, maybe 7 or 8 degrees. And don't fact check me on these exact numbers, but these are just sort of estimates. 40 degree bank angle, now we're up to like 15-16% increase in stall speed. We get to a 50 degree bank angle, now we're almost to 25% increase in stall speed. So in summary, we now know that the maximum angle of attack at which air remains attached over the wing surface is called the critical angle of attack. At this critical angle of attack, we have a maximum coefficient of lift. The aircraft velocity at which this maximum coefficient of lift occurs is called the stall speed. And we've represented that both by equations and then also in these charts that we see here in the lesson. But this stall speed can occur at many different speeds depending on the configuration and conditions of an aircraft and flight. Things like the air density, aircraft weight, the aircraft and aircraft load factor affect the speed at which this maximum coefficient of lift and thus the stall speed occurs at. Load factor and weight are directly proportional to the stall speed, meaning that when they go up, so does the stall speed. Air density and max coefficient of lift are inversely proportional at stall speed, meaning they go up as stall speed goes down. Furthermore, load factor is especially critical to pilots because of the many load factors pilots are subject to on any given flight. A simple bank can have vast effects on the load factor and thus the stall speed of an aircraft, and it is extremely important that a pilot understands this. For example, just a 30 degree bank can increase the load factor and in turn the stall speed by up to 5%. This means that if you are turning to final and flying around 60 knots on getting ready for your final velocity, your final approach speed of a 60 knots, which is something that is common in small aircraft, and let's say your documented stall speed is 55 knots indicated, a bank of more than 30% can increase the stall speed by 5 to 10%, or that means 3 to 6 knots indicated airspeed, which is enough to exceed your 60 knots that you have on your final approach. So when you only have like that 5 knot difference between your stall speed and your approach speed, just during that turn, a bank of 30 degrees or more can increase that stall speed by 5 to 10% and actually put you in that place where you reach that stall speed and you lose flow over the wings and you create a stall at that very slow speed and very low altitude, which is a very dangerous condition. This is why it is so important to have controlled turns, coordinated turns, and hit your airspeeds with precision on your patterns. All right, so that has been the lesson on stalls. Now, I have an aerospace engineering background, so I like to go deep into the detail on how these things work. So I hope that wasn't too much into the weeds for you guys. Remember, don't get caught up in memorizing these equations or thinking, when am I ever going to use these equations? They are just to represent the relationships that we talked about to the load factor when we're not in straight and level unaccelerated flight, how that relates to stall speed and the critical angle of attack for a given aircraft configuration. So that was the whole purpose of talking about those equations. Don't get caught up. You're not going to be asked to know those on your check ride or your written exam. And for you guys, I have a video that I'll put in the show notes. How does an aircraft stall? It goes over this entire lesson, gives some visual aids that we've talked about. So I'll put that in the show notes. And then also, if you're not following along in the online ground school, I highly recommend it because we talk about those graphs, these equations. You get a visual feel of these equations. You can actually see these relationships in both the graph form and the equation form. And then also we have the diagrams of, you know, the separated flow and all the stuff, as well as the quiz for this lesson, which will help reinforce all this knowledge. So if you're not in the online ground school, go check that out, parttimepilot.com. Just click on our courses tab and get signed up with us. We would love to have you guys. And if you are in there, please, after you've listened to this episode, go through and see it visually, because it's going to help make it all click. Do the quiz and good luck on that quiz. All right. So thank you guys for listening. Again, remember, there's a few things in the show notes. We talked about our free study guide, which is up on our website. That link's in the show notes, or you can just go to parttimepilot.com and click on free study guide in the menu. Or we also have a sign up wait list for our Oshkosh promotion, which basically, again, reminder, you get a free t-shirt and $25 if you just send us a picture of you in the t-shirt at Oshkosh. That's literally all you have to do. But you also have a chance to make a lot more money if you get students to sign up with us while you're at Oshkosh. And it will be super simple because you're just going to have a QR code on your t-shirt that people can scan. And all you have to do is say, hey, do you want free pilot tools? But you don't have to do that if you don't want to. You can just take the free shirt and get out of Dodge. That is fine with us. But if you want to have a chance to be a part of that kind of group, you need to sign up for that wait list, and then we'll send you more information. Again, we had a lot of people express interest in that because I guess people like free t-shirts and free money. So we're probably going to limit the number of people that we actually do. So you want to get on the wait list so you can get the first access to that sign up when we send that out. Again, Oshkosh is at the end of July, so we got some time, but we're going to start sending out some information here in a few weeks. So get signed up on that wait list. And then finally, the last thing in the show notes is the video of how aircraft stall, so you can watch the video lesson of what you just heard. All right, guys, thank you. Good luck. Stay safe up there, and I'll talk to you next week. Hey guys, it's Nick. I want to take a second to speak directly to the student pilots out there. You might be a student pilot that is, you know, wondering what to do next, how to get started, or maybe you're looking for the right ground training or flight training, or maybe you've already started ground training or flight training and you're stuck, you're in a rut, and you're looking for a change, something to help get you out of that hurdle. From my own experience in flight training, after 3 years, five instructors, and $22,000, and wanting to quit multiple times, and then now, after seeing hundreds and hundreds of student pilots through Part-Time Pilot, I've realized that the number one thing that makes student pilots fail is that they do not have a good fundamental understanding of the ground training when they get to the more advanced flight lessons. Now, who here has seen Top Gun Maverick? Do you remember in the movie when he says, "Don't think, just do"? Now, when I heard this, I was like, oh my goodness, this is brilliant, because this is exactly what you have to be as a pilot. Now, of course, it's not that we're not thinking, but it's that we understand things like weather, aerodynamics, what our instruments are telling us, what ATC is telling us. We have such a good core fundamental understanding of these things that we don't have to think about them. And when we don't have to think about them, we can instinctively feel and fly the aircraft, look out for dangers, and avoid emergency situations. If we do have to think about these things, it's going to put us behind mentally, and we're going to be behind the aircraft. And when you're behind the aircraft mentally, bad things happen. And this happens when you don't have a good understanding of the ground school content. So now, the first 10 to 15 hours of your flight training can go smooth, even if you don't have a good understanding of ground training, right? You can go up for a discovery flight, have a blast. You can go up, learn how to take off, learn how to land. You may be even able to solo for the first time, fly a plane for the first time. Everything's great and dandy. But once you get into, you know, bad weather flying, or flying at heavily trafficked airports, or speaking with ATC for Bravo clearance, or cross-country flight planning and flying solo on a cross-country flight, things get a little more advanced. And when this happens and you don't have a good understanding of the ground school concepts, you're gonna hit a wall. You're gonna start to get behind the aircraft. And when this happens, if you have a good flight instructor, they're going to stop you and they're going to say, okay, we need to do one-on-one ground lessons. And now you're going to be paying your flight instructor to not even fly with you, but instead $50, $60, $70 an hour to just teach you the ground school content that you should already know. And the worst part is you're not flying with them. So the flight training that you gained, the currency, the proficiency that you gained is going to be lost, and you're going to have to redo those lessons. What happens to most student pilots is they continuously hit these mental blocks where they get behind the aircraft, they start making mistakes, and then they catch up with the ground knowledge only to have that happen again. And they start to get in this vicious cycle of having to redo trainings and repay for trainings until it gets to the point where them or their family, they finally say, you know what, this has to stop. We can no longer afford the training costs without any progress, you know, and they end up quitting. Now, so how do we avoid that? Well, here comes Part-Time Pilot. Again, I said I went through my own experience of this, and I realized that most flight training and ground training is not tailored to the modern day student pilot. When I say modern day student pilot, I just say modern day part-time student pilot, because let's face it, there's a very small percentage of us that can go and dedicate 24/7, 365 to our flight training, or not even miss a beat and be able to pay for flight training without working. So most of us have a full-time job or maybe a part-time job. We have kids, we have family, we have school. We have all these other responsibilities on top of flight training. And most of these flight trainings and ground trainings are not tailored towards you. And so how is it the part-time pilot tailors to the modern day student pilot? Well, the first way we do that is by keeping ground school interesting. You want to avoid being boring. You want to avoid that burnout. So how we do that is we present our material in multiple ways. And you're actually listening to one of them right now. You can consume our content via this podcast and an audio recording. You can do this while you're running, while you're driving in traffic. Again, tailoring to that busy part-time student pilot. Or you can read through our written lessons. You know, I like to read. So for those of you that like to read, you can read through the lessons. You can see the step-by-step examples and the procedures that we have. Or you can look through our study guide and see our diagrams and mnemonic devices, have that visual cue, those visual cues and aids that help further your understanding. Or you can watch our videos. Or you can take our quizzes and practice tests to reinforce what you just learned. And then finally, you can join us live weekly for our live Q&A and our live lessons so you can see in real time these things taught out and these examples done in real time. And then finally, you can utilize our group community to form study groups, get questions answered 24/7. All of this is tailored for the modern day student pilot to keep ground school interesting, keep it from being boring, keep from having that burnout, and to find ways that you can consume the content throughout your busy schedule. And guess what? It works. We've had over 350 student pilots come through, take and pass their FAA exams without a single student failing. That's right. A single student has yet to tell me that they failed either their FAA written or their FAA check ride. So that is just proof in the pudding right there that our concepts, the way we explain things in plain written English, and the way we give you multiple ways to consume this content is working. So if this sounds like something you might be interested in and you want to come join us, we'd love to have you. Just go to www.parttimepilot.com, click on Online Ground School, and we'll see you inside the Online Ground School. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.